This episode is brought to you by Armoire, a clothing rental platform that makes getting dressed easy. With a membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended specifically for you. Just take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The clothes show up at your door in as little as 2 days, and when you're ready for something new, you can swap them out for more styles. Armoire is great if your body is changing, whether you're going through eating disorder recovery, giving up dieting, or experiencing other body changes like pregnancy, hormonal shifts, or anything else. I've been dealing with some of those changes myself lately, and I'm so glad I got to try Armoire. I rented a bunch of great dresses and didn't have to worry about buying things that might not fit in a few months. I can just swap them out for the next size or style. This is also the only clothing rental service I've seen that lets you keep your current box until the new one arrives, so you're never without something cute to wear. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/psych. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/psych to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by the Making Peace with Food card deck, which I co-authored with therapist Judith Matz to help you end chronic dieting and find joy in eating. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/card deck to order it now. That's ChristyHarrison.com/card deck. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Hey there, welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering an audience question about whether most people really need to go gluten-free and how to tell when cutting out gluten is actually a disordered eating behavior. This is a super important question because wellness culture is constantly pushing gluten-free diets for one reason or another, so most people have probably considered cutting out gluten at some point. In this answer, I'll explain why it's not likely to help and why it may actually cause harm. Before I do, just a couple of quick announcements. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by the Making Peace with Food card deck, which I co-authored with therapist Judith Matz to help you end chronic dieting and find joy in eating. The deck contains 59 anti-diet strategies to help you break free from the diet mindset and find peace with food. Use these cards to help support you in rejecting diet culture, honoring your hunger, finding self-compassion, navigating emotional eating, and lots more. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/card deck to order it now. That's ChristyHarrison.com/card deck. Now, without any further ado, let's get into this week's question. It's from a listener named Jamie who writes, "I've just recently started listening to your podcast and I'm realizing I most likely have an eating disorder. I thought I was doing it to be healthy, but I think I have IBS or irritable bowel syndrome and was blaming it on gluten and dairy like you've talked about. My question is this. I've gone the past 10 plus years avoiding gluten, which is a protein found in wheat, rye, and barley, pretty religiously. Every now and then I try to eat it and it makes me very miserable. I become very bloated, extremely fatigued, and I almost feel like I have the flu without the cold-like symptoms. How do I get through this? Will it go away? It usually peaks at the third day and I give up and quit gluten again. This has reinforced my beliefs that I need to avoid it. More recently, dairy has been doing this to me also. I haven't been as religious about avoiding dairy as I have with gluten, but when I do avoid it, I do feel better until I don't. So I'm thinking that stress is maybe what's causing these symptoms. I don't know. I'm a little confused about it. This train of thought is so different from what I'm used to. I hope I can introduce gluten back into my system without having the negative symptoms I've been experiencing. I heard on one of your podcasts that some people experience a nocebo effect, and I'm wondering if that's what I'm experiencing. except that I sometimes get accidentally glutened and still have the same reaction, even though I didn't know I was consuming gluten. This leads me to believe my body is experiencing an actual reaction. Please help. Thank you. So thanks, Jamie, for that great question. And before I answer, I'll just give my standard disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. Also, this is just my take as one dietitian and journalist, and I hope you'll seek out other perspectives and consult your own inner compass as well. So first, I really want to empathize with what you're going through because my own past experience with disordered eating and food avoidance and ongoing experience of IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, which I still have, has shown me how uncomfortable and confusing it can be to untangle the reasons for your symptoms when you have so many things going on. So it sounds like you're realizing that your disordered eating is likely playing a role here, and that's a huge step. Because in this culture, aka diet culture, that frames every ache, pain, or other symptom as food's fault, it really can take a lot to recognize that what you eat is often a lot less important than how you're relating to food. So if you're restricting and then rebound eating or binging, using compensatory behaviors, and/or treating certain foods as off-limits, you're almost certainly going to have physical symptoms of some kind because disordered eating really does a number on your GI tract and many other systems in the body as well. And those symptoms tend to be worse in the presence of foods you're already anxious about. So that's the nocebo effect you mentioned, right? And for folks who aren't already familiar with that term, the nocebo effect is a phenomenon where merely thinking that something, such as gluten, is making you sick causes actual symptoms. So the nocebo effect is really the opposite of the placebo effect, where believing that the placebo is making you better reduces symptoms, right? The nocebo makes you feel worse, the placebo makes you feel better. So in general, Jamie, your symptoms with gluten and dairy sound like they could be due very well in large part to the nocebo effect. Stress and anxiety about food and about other things as well can definitely trigger physical responses like bloating, fatigue, and feeling run down. And in diet culture, in its modern guise as wellness or the wellness diet, it certainly creates plenty of anxiety around gluten and dairy, right? Those are such demonized foods in diet and wellness culture. And the fact that you still have symptoms when you get, quote unquote, accidentally glutened is definitely worth investigating, I will say. But even that doesn't necessarily mean that you're reacting to the gluten itself. So I'd invite you to think about the situations in which you've accidentally consumed gluten, right? Most likely, there are times when you've eaten food that you didn't prepare or control. And how do you feel when you aren't in control of what's in your food? Many people with disordered eating feel anxious in those situations, and that added layer of stress can potentially trigger physical symptoms. Similarly, when people with disordered eating eat at restaurants or friends' houses, they tend to eat differently than they usually do at home, right? Either eating more food to sort of show people that you eat and you're not restricting, or eating less food to try to look virtuous, or maybe eating different kinds and combinations of food than you would allow yourself at home. And those kinds of changes in routine and/or anxiety about those changes in routine, right, which often accompany them, are common triggers for IBS, regardless of what foods you're actually eating. So in other words, it's not necessarily the food itself causing symptoms, but simply the fact that you're eating differently all of a sudden that could trigger some physical symptoms. So you might try experimenting with ways to reduce anxiety and disordered eating when you're not in charge of the food preparation, and see if that helps reduce your symptoms when you do unintentionally eat gluten. I've also been mentioning this a lot lately, but if you're not already working with a treatment team, you can find a list of providers on my website at christyharrison.com/providers, and we'll link to that in the show notes from this episode as well. Now, that all being said, I think there is still a chance that gluten could be causing symptoms for you, so I don't want to totally dismiss that possibility. Dairy, though, sounds a lot less likely to be a true source of symptoms, judging by what you wrote, so I'm focusing here on gluten because it sounds like the nocebo effect is probably a leading factor in your relationship with dairy. But here is a simple way to test it. taking over-the-counter lactase enzymes when eating dairy would most likely help with any lactose intolerance you may have, which is common among adults and would probably be the leading cause of any issues with dairy. So if you take lactase enzymes consistently as directed and you don't see any improvement in your symptoms, then I would say it's unlikely that you have lactose intolerance. So that's one way to potentially test it. Though again, of course, this is not individual medical advice, so I would recommend working with a doctor on that as well. But getting back to gluten, you know, in some cases, as I've mentioned here before, people with disordered eating can develop some temporary sensitivities to particular foods, right? Marcy Evans and I talked about this in episode 175 of Food Psych, which we'll link to in the show notes. So that is one potential reason that you could be experiencing these symptoms. But in a very small percentage of cases, there can be another and even more serious reason you might experience symptoms in response to eating gluten, and that is celiac disease. So you didn't mention whether you've ever been screened for celiac disease or tested, but I would definitely recommend getting tested judging by the symptoms you're talking about. Celiac disease is an autoimmune condition characterized by an intolerance to gluten, which affects up to 1% of the population. It's actually only about 0.75% in the U.S. And a medical doctor can give you a blood test for it where they'll look for both the celiac disease gene and anti-gluten antibodies in your blood. So if you don't have either of those markers in a blood test, then it's highly unlikely gluten is actually causing your symptoms. And in my first book, Anti-Diet, I explain why. I talk about the compelling evidence that so-called non-celiac gluten sensitivity probably isn't related to gluten at all. So celiac disease is definitely real and is a cause of gluten intolerance for up to 1% of the population. Non-celiac gluten sensitivity is much more contested and, according to one of the leading researchers on it, may not even be due to gluten at all, but perhaps to the nocebo or placebo effect. But if you do have celiac disease, getting a diagnosis, I would say, is really essential for your well-being. Now, the catch with the antibody test for celiac disease is that you have to be eating gluten consistently for several months before your blood work. Otherwise, it can result in false negatives. And so I would be curious to know what comes up for you when you think about that, when you think about having to eat gluten consistently in order to get tested. Do you get so anxious that it feels impossible to do that? Do you just want to avoid it so that you can keep avoiding gluten? Those responses could potentially be a clue that your seeming reactions to gluten are driven largely by your negative beliefs about it, right? The power of the nocebo effect. Because if you feel really resistant to even eating gluten to get the test that would confirm or deny the existence of celiac disease, then I think, you know, that shows you've got a lot of psychological baggage around gluten, right? But maybe instead you feel ready to steel yourself and start eating gluten in the name of science, in the name of knowing the correct diagnosis. And maybe you feel able to sit with any uncomfortable symptoms that might arise. And if that's the case, I think that could be a sign that there's maybe less of a nocebo effect going on than you may have thought. But, you know, perhaps you feel ambivalent with part of you wanting to avoid the test and part of you feeling resolved to try it despite your apprehension. And if you're in that kind of ambivalence stage, I think that's a good indication that you're human, right? A lot of us are ambivalent about a lot of things a lot of the time. But it might help to reflect and mull that over for a while and see if your feelings shift and change as time goes on. And if you're willing to try the test and, you know, diagnose or rule out celiac disease, I think that could really help determine where to go as a next step. So thanks again, Jamie, for that great question. And I hope this helps you sort through some of your concerns about gluten and dairy and figure out some things to explore with a dietitian and a doctor to really get yourself the proper support and diagnosis. If you want to submit your own question for a chance to have it answered either here or in my Food Psych weekly newsletter, just go to ChristyHarrison.com/questions. That's ChristyHarrison.com/questions. So that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this podcast helpful, I would be so grateful if you'd take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can see all the places to do that at ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. That's ChristyHarrison.com/subscribe. To get full show notes and a transcript of this episode, just go to ChristyHarrison.com/288. That's ChristyHarrison.com/288. And to get the transcript, just scroll down to the bottom of the page and enter your email address. This episode was brought to you by the Making Peace with Food card deck, which I co-authored with therapist Judith Matz to help you end chronic dieting and find joy in eating. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/card deck to order it now. That's ChristyHarrison.com/card deck. A big thanks, as always, to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Witasik, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. I'm your host and producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.